fallecidos, encendiendo más de 1000 velas en un acto conocido como la Guardia de la Memoria.
La virtual candidata demócrata a la presidencia de Estados Unidos, Hillary Clinton, y su rival republicano Donald Trump continúan un duelo de palabras sin presentar un programa o plataforma de trabajo ante el electorado. Y mientras los dos supuestos finalistas, demócrata y republicano, buscan cobertura mediática lanzando insultos, el intelectual Noam Chomsky alerta a la población diciendo que el llamado sueño americano ha dejado de existir. Escuchemos.
Durante la Gran Depresión, que soy lo suficientemente viejo como para recordar, y siendo la mayor parte de mi familia de clase trabajadora desempleada, la cosa estaba mal, mucho peor subjetivamente que hoy en día. Pero existía una expectativa de que las cosas iban a ir mejorando. Había un verdadero sentimiento de esperanza. Hoy no lo hay. La desigualdad actual realmente no tiene precedentes. Si nos fijamos en la desigualdad total, es similar a la de los peores periodos de la historia de Estados Unidos. Pero si echamos una mirada más detallada, la desigualdad se da por la extrema riqueza de un reducidísimo grupo de la población, una fracción del 1%. Hubo épocas, como la edad dorada de los años 20 o los felices 90 y algunos otros, en los que la situación se desarrolló de forma bastante parecida. Pero este periodo es extremo, porque si nos fijamos en la distribución de la riqueza, la desigualdad viene principalmente de la riqueza extrema. Literalmente la décima parte de un 1% que son extremadamente ricos. No solo es extremadamente injusto por sí mismo, la desigualdad tiene consecuencias muy negativas en la sociedad como conjunto. Porque el hecho mismo de la desigualdad tiene un efecto corrosivo, nocivo, sobre la democracia. Empezó usted hablando del sueño americano. Una parte del sueño americano es la movilidad social. Naces pobre, trabajas duro y te haces rico. Para un trabajador era posible conseguir un empleo digno, comprarse una casa, un auto, poder llevar a sus hijos a la escuela. Todo eso se derrumbó.
El Consejo de la Organización de Estados Americanos sesiona de forma extraordinaria sobre Venezuela. Los miembros de la OEA se pronunciaron a favor del diálogo en la Nación del Sur. La situación en el país centró la sesión extraordinaria del organismo. El ex primer ministro español José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero desempeña un papel prominente en las pláticas. Escuchemos este reporte preparado por Erika Ortega.
En esta sesión Zapatero ha dicho que su interés y el de los expresidentes de Panamá Martín Torrijos y República Dominicana Leonel Fernández es buscar la manera de llegar a un proceso de paz preventivo que tenga como objetivo respetar la libre autodeterminación de los pueblos y también los tiempos que se requieren para llegar a acuerdos.
Debo decir, y cualquiera que se aproxime a lo que supone Venezuela y no piense así, sencillamente es que se tiene que aproximar con más profundidad. Este será un proceso largo, duro y difícil.
Para Zapatero hay cuatro puntos en la agenda que deben ser considerados para el diálogo. El primero es el conflicto que se ha venido generando entre poderes públicos después de las elecciones del 6 de diciembre, elecciones legislativas en las cuales la oposición logró la mayoría en el Parlamento venezolano. El segundo término es promover la reconciliación a través de varias figuras, como por ejemplo la amnistía, indultos, reparación de víctimas y la Comisión de la Verdad propuesta por el presidente de la República, Nicolás Maduro Moros. Asimismo, el tercer punto es observar la situación actual de Leopoldo López y, por último, atender el cumplimiento de cronogramas electorales. Sobre ese mismo tema se refirió también la delegación de Argentina, de México, de Canadá y de Estados Unidos. Precisamente la canciller de Venezuela, Delcy Rodríguez, se refirió a este último representante, el de Estados Unidos, recordándole que el referendo revocatorio en Venezuela para este año no puede ser posible.
Sobre el referendo revocatorio, reclámele a sus aliados en Venezuela que no lo hicieron el 11 de enero y por tanto no es posible cumplir el cronograma legal para que se lleve a cabo ese mecanismo este año. Reclámele a sus aliados, no le reclame al gobierno de Venezuela ni al poder electoral venezolano, que somos autónomos, independientes y soberanos, y estamos llamados además con responsabilidad a hacer respetar el Estado de Derecho en Venezuela. No puede venir ni pretender ningún gobierno extranjero a exigirle a Venezuela que vulnere su Estado de Derecho. Eso es inadmisible.
Rodríguez dijo además que la razón por la cual la oposición no se sienta a dialogar con el gobierno venezolano es porque el secretario general de la Organización de Estados Americanos, Luis Almagro, ha prometido que el próximo 23 de junio se activará la Carta Democrática en contra de Venezuela, y por ello mismo la canciller ha solicitado que esa sesión se anule por ser intervencionista y además ilegal.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras, wordpress.com.
Y mientras países aliados de Washington presionan en la OEA para sacar concesiones del gobierno en Caracas, los medios corporativos norteamericanos atacan al primer mandatario venezolano Nicolás Maduro. Escuchemos más detalles en este reporte de Aurora Samperio.
Ken Silverstein se ha desempeñado como periodista y escritor en medios como Los Angeles Times, prensa asociada en Brasil, The Nation, y actualmente contribuye como editor del canal de documentales Vice. Basado en su experiencia, Ken afirma que la prensa estadounidense no ha sido imparcial al exponer la realidad venezolana.
La gente aquí no tiene ninguna perspectiva de que acá está sucediendo en Venezuela. O en la mayor parte del mundo, los medios en Estados Unidos lo que hacen es seguir la línea de la Casa Blanca. Si es un gobierno republicano o demócrata, no importa. Existe hostilidad por ambos partidos hacia Venezuela, desde que Chávez asumió el poder.
Venezuela is the number three source of U.S. imported oil.
Of the people of Venezuela, and we stand with the international community.
En las últimas semanas, los medios locales se han dedicado a presentar a Venezuela como un país gobernado por un presidente, Nicolás Maduro, a quien califican como un dictador. Una retórica que viene reforzada por algunos congresistas y funcionarios de gobierno.
Cuando un presidente argumenta que en ese país hay un dictador, entonces la prensa tiene un gran desafío de cambiar esa narrativa. Aún así, hay una abrumadora evidencia de lo contrario. El pasado diciembre, Venezuela tuvo elecciones al Congreso. Personalmente pienso que nunca hemos visto a un dictador perder un tercio del Congreso y aceptar los resultados.
Washington Post ha dedicado varios de sus editoriales a Venezuela, como este titular que cita: Venezuela está desesperada y necesita intervención política. Y el New York Times publica la misma retórica como este editorial de mayo 7, en el cual titulan: alineando un cambio para Venezuela. Ambos periódicos son los de mayor circulación en el país.
Es muy preocupante para los que estamos a favor de la democracia, la justicia y la paz, y presionamos al Departamento de Estado y a los congresistas de apoyar la democracia por la cual la gente votó, y no apoyar a estas élites minoritarias, estos monólogos de los medios que están enfatizando un descontento.
Y más allá de lo que los medios de comunicación locales puedan presentar en la pantalla tradicional o medios escritos, en las redes sociales la retórica no es muy distinta, e incluso va a un nivel superior de ataque. Por ejemplo, el secretario general de la Organización de Estados Americanos, Luis Almagro, quien debería tener un rol imparcial, muestra lo contrario en su cuenta de Twitter, donde predomina el tema Venezuela.
Lo que estamos viendo ahora es una derecha más sofisticada, un movimiento antidemocrático a través de Latinoamérica, donde a través de la exageración de las noticias, a través de los medios, la derecha está haciendo que el ciudadano común deje de apoyar a los gobiernos progresistas que han utilizado los recursos públicos para reducir la pobreza e incrementar la participación de la gente que ha sido marginada.
De acuerdo al lingüista y politólogo Noam Chomsky, los medios de comunicación masivos actúan como transmisores de mensaje hacia el ciudadano promedio, pero cuando no se puede controlar a la gente por la fuerza, controlan lo que la gente piensa. Aurora Samperio, Telesur, Washington.
El presidente de Venezuela, Nicolás Maduro Moros.
Si la derecha no quiere diálogo por la paz, ¿qué quiere? Yo, por autoridad que me da el pueblo, por conciencia y ética política, estoy obligado a llamar a una rectificación a la oposición y a que se sienten al diálogo político por la paz y la prosperidad de Venezuela. Les ratifico este llamado. Basta de insensatez, basta de violencia, basta de insensatez, basta de conspiradera. Pero como dice nuestra Biblia, el libro sagrado de nuestro Señor, del Creador y de nuestro Señor Jesucristo, a Dios rogando y con el pueblo movilizando, a Dios rogando y con el pueblo luchando, a Dios rogando y todos los días cimarroneando, que nadie baje la guardia, que nadie se descuide frente a las amenazas de violencia. Tenemos que ganar la paz, con ellos o sin ellos. Hoy ha arremetido en una campaña infernal contra el expresidente Rodríguez Zapatero por sus intervenciones en la OEA, y pretenden en la OEA el inefable Almagro, al mugre le dicen por allá por un cumbe, pretende intentar de manera terca y despiadada activar un plan de intervención contra Venezuela. No se metan con Venezuela.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa, el mismo que es producido gracias a las generosas donaciones de las y los radioyentes. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Si algún día las fuerzas de la derecha imperial aprobaran en alguna instancia un plan para expulsar a Venezuela, para suspender a Venezuela, para excluir a Venezuela o para intervenir a Venezuela, si algún día eso llegara a suceder, tengan la seguridad que no me temblaría el pulso para tomar las medidas más radicales que puedo tomar, autorizado por la Constitución y el pueblo de Venezuela.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to 101.3 FM. It's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. 2 hours of me talking to you, and who knows, maybe you talking to me on the call-in line at 427-3772. We're going to be hopefully getting interviews from Salinas and getting updates on the 130 trial tomorrow of yours truly in the court of Department 1 over in the courthouse. That's going to be in the court of Sam Stevens, who's sitting in for Paul Maragauja, also known as Paul Maraganda. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in sing nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences, Marshall. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And that's, of course, our intro, and let's hope we don't run over into something else, which we won't. So, welcome to Free Radio's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm getting it together here in my third or fourth visit to the studio. I guess it's the third. And we are now not just broadcasting live, but taking live phone calls, thanks to the help of our devoted techies who know a lot more about putting stuff into the studio than I do. And you can now call in with updates, breaking news, comments on what you hear at 427-3772, area code 831-427-3772. So a couple things are coming up in the next few days. I'll announce them. If you've been to a Huff meeting, you would have heard about them already. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's a group that meets every Wednesday, composed these days mostly of houseless folks, but authoritarianly led by me. I tend to come in and, well, I rotate the chair when it's requested and even offer to do so, but I'm always interested in seeing a particular focus happen, and so it's more of a... It has a lot of that kind of aspect to it, where I bring in items that I want to essentially get support from other folks, and I encourage others to do the same, and then we see if there's the person power to take the kinds of actions that I think expose injustices in the community, maybe give heart to some of the people who are suffering that, and so they understand they're not alone, and even expose the people who are in the institutions that are screwing over the poor. And that's the point of Huff every Wednesday at 11 o'clock. So the Freedom Sleepers just finished their 50th night of sleeping at City Hall. They are a devoted group that I report on faithfully and support, but am not specifically a sleeper with them, haven't been for many months. But I like to keep the community advised as to what's going on with them. And I'm still fighting the citations that I got last year, sleeping with the Freedom Sleepers and being on the in the forbidden area, which has been extended to include the most, well, you would think the most First Amendment protected area, the Santa Cruz City Council courtyard area, which is right outside the mayor's office, the council member's office, the city council chambers, the center and the seat of city government. And I think any other city that you can name, these areas are open for peaceful protest. There are disagreements and there are actions taken against encampments that happen there, but not against people actually being in the areas of city government and other cities, even at night. But Santa Cruz, in its rather arrogant and behind-the-scenes approach to crushing homeless protest and restricting, not just unduly restricting, but I think unconstitutionally restricting the community and trying to dampen down any potential protest, has declared the area around City Hall at night after 10 o'clock, or half an hour after the City Council leaves on those second and fourth Tuesdays when the City Council meets. It won't be meeting next for the next month, however. It'll be on vacation throughout July. But during that time after 10 o'clock, it is illegal to be in the area. And this is part of a broader ordinance that is used to criminalize and close essentially all the city parks and all the other areas patrolled by Parks and Rec insofar as they want to close them down. I can't imagine them closing down Pacific Avenue at night, but in theory, they have the right to do so because that is part of the area covered by Municipal Code 13.04.011 that is within the Parks and Rec jurisdiction, and the city manager can include other areas in the city at his discretion without even going through the Parks and Rec Commission for their approval. Not that that would be too difficult to get, but that's supposedly the citizen body that advises, I don't want to say oversees, because I would say they probably more like they're under the Parks and Rec Department, but it is a strange, restrictive situation we have here in Santa Cruz ever since 2010, when the Peace Camp 2010 protesters moved from the county building to the City Hall area to continue their end the sleeping ban protests of that year. They were quite successful, actually, in prompting the city attorney, a guy called John Barisoni at that time. He's now been supplanted by Tony Condotti, to bring before the city council and get unanimous passage with virtually no discussion that I remember of liberalization of the sleeping ban that essentially gave them a legal hook on which to claim to courts that they weren't violating the Eighth Amendment about cruel and unusual punishment or the right to travel or substantive due process or equal treatment of the laws by criminalizing people at night who fall asleep and have to sleep somewhere. And so they fall asleep where they can, whether it's a poganip or in a bush somewhere or in their own vehicle in a proper and legally parked spot, all of which is illegal. Or, you know, if you fall asleep in a theater, if you fall asleep in any structure not intended for human habitation, so broad is the sleeping ban code, that is itself a crime. And these protesters were like the freedom sleepers that have been doing this every Tuesday for the last year. These Peace Camp 2010 protesters who established a safe sleeping zone, as the freedom sleepers have done too. Although the Peace Camp 2010 safe sleeping zone lasted nightly for a month and then continued with police harassment. I don't know how safe that you can really call it, but it was the focus of a protest has both advantages and disadvantages. The disadvantage, of course, is that you get the police, the Klieg lights, the potential tickets, the wake-ups. The advantage is that there's some media coverage of what's going on, even if it's only the activists' own media putting out what goes on. And the police, to some extent, have to be aware that they are under observation. So when the homeless person wakes up and is woken by the police and they say, get out of here, and you say, well, where can I go sleep? And they say, call the shelter, and they say, no, the shelter's full, or it's closed unless you happen to be in a program and it's got a waiting list, you know, or I tried that and it didn't work, and they don't give you a place to go, then they're essentially criminalizing homelessness, which is what they've done in Santa Cruz throughout the last, well, probably the past insofar as you look back. But increasingly, as the city becomes more gentrified and people have to they retreat to their cars when they lose their rental space or their houses, or they they come back to town to visit friends and so forth, and if they're sleeping outside anywhere, even safely and cleanly and in an unobtrusive way, they're likely to be ticketed by rangers or by police who do not, I've got to be very candid about this, approach them with everybody we see we're going to ticket who's doing this, or there would be no room in the jails, and it would be a nightmare for the police and everybody. But the fact is that they use the law selectively, which of course is itself a violation of equal protection of the laws under our U.S. and probably the state constitution as well. I don't know the exact amendment for the state constitution. Anyway, tomorrow there's a case that goes to court. That's my case. Two of my tickets will be going to court at 1:30. I've talked about this before on the air, and you can read more about it on Santa Cruz Indie Bay, Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and you can kind of get the update. I mistakenly put out the time at 10 a.m. because that was what me and the other people watching in the courtroom and the attorney who was with me, Kate Wells, were told by Judge Paul Maraganda, who I was calling Paul Maragauja, because of his behavior in essentially, he's a homeless hostile. I have to say, politician. He might be a homeless hostile individual, for all I know. I don't know anything about his personal life, but I know that as mayor of Scotts Valley, he voted for a sleeping ban there about 10 years ago, and now we have a sleeping ban in Scotts Valley. 30 years ago, he took up the cudgels for the Coal Valley Improvement Association in the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco to drive away Food Not Bombs. That's a bunch of NIMBYs who are gentrifying the area who wanted to drive away poor people from the Golden Gate Park area where they were getting, I think it was only weekly or twice weekly meals at that time, but though Food Not Bombs in San Francisco in 1988, when this happened, soon expanded to much more frequent feedings. And if you want to know more about that, come to the twice weekly meals, actually now three times if you count the Freedom Sleepers, at the post office where Food Not Bombs serves 4 to 6 on the weekends, Saturday and Sunday. So this trial is about the police attempt to drive away homeless people from, and activists, housed activists, from the area at City Hall where used to be a lot of grass. They've torn that up and in what I think is a pretty blatant get the hell out of here to homeless people day and night, and the same message to protesters, making it unwelcoming as, I don't know, I'm not sure if Pamela Comstock, our city council member, co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz would say, but I suspect some of her supporters would. And anyway, it's unconstitutional, and it's cruel, and it's costly, and it's unnecessary, and it's at some level futile, because you push, you know, you squeeze the balloon, and it pops out somewhere else. That's what happens to poor people. And I suppose with sufficient militants, they can drive poor people away and make this a gated community. In fact, that really is what they're doing with the regulations that will make it illegal to even park an RV at all at night, or at least during certain portions of the night, unless you are a resident. And homeless people have been defined out of existence as now being non-residents, even though the federal government and the state government, and I suppose even the county government, will tell you that a homeless person can register to vote at any address they happen to be at and are going to be maintaining for any length of time or have been at for any length of time. You can't deny someone the right to vote. And you also can't deny someone the right to live and to sleep. That's been the issue for decades for many of us. So at 1:30 tomorrow in Department 1, I'll be there clad in my fashionable bathrobe, probably rather a raggedy bathrobe, which I wear in order to essentially both prompt a smile from passersby and also a kind of an understanding when they talk to me about it, if they do, about what kind of law Santa Cruz suffers under with this sleeping ban law. And not just Santa Cruz. Other cities have similar ordinances, but nothing quite as explicitly draconian as Santa Cruz, although the Santa Cruz ordinance is an infraction law. So this will be a non-jury trial for those who are confused about that, and there was some confusion to a few people I talked to. I was originally told by Paul Maraganda, the judge, that this was going to be at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Then I learned by calling the court that wasn't true. It was at 1:30. So no matter what the judge tells you, check the court records. Might be a good idea. I was given a heads up by a fellow who identifies himself by the name James Brown, who wrote a brief note on this on the Indie Bay story. I posted a calendar event there, and I think it's appeared elsewhere. So I'll be there, and you're always welcome to check this out. I don't know if it's going to be terribly exciting. It's me fighting two citations, one in July and one in August of last year. Almost all the other citations, as far as I know, have either gone to collection, been dismissed, or gone to trial. And mine was delayed because I had medical problems in the earlier part of this year that kind of set me back 3 or 4 months. So I'll be down there, and when anyone is welcome to come. But I think even more important than attending this trial is to support the Freedom Sleepers ongoing protests and the fight against the sleeping ban. And I got a report from the persistent and militant and really commendable Abby Samuels, who is if she isn't doing a full-time job, she's also working Food Not Bombs on the weekends, and if she isn't doing that, she's defending the Food Not Bombs people who are being told by the police, you can't sit here, you can't sit there. And if she isn't doing that, she's at the Freedom Sleepers, defending the Freedom Sleepers, where she sleeps with them every night. And I don't mean that in any sexual context. I mean that as everybody sleeps on the sidewalk. I guess, you know, and I don't know if there has been much sexual to do at the Freedom Sleepers. I would welcome it. I would say that's fine. I don't. But then again, I would be accused perhaps of either being in advance of my time or too lewd or something. But in any case, Abby needs help with this. She and Zav, another really long-time, hard-working activist, have been doing this for months, as well as many homeless people who come every Tuesday night to help out, but they are running out of steam, or they're going to need some more help, is what Abby was telling me today on the phone. She at least is. She's, you know, it's kind of exhausting her, as it really would. She sets it up. She stays there the night. She defends people against the police by talking to the police and telling them that they have a right to lie on the sidewalk in this area. And yes, they're not blocking the sidewalk. If you want to ticket them for sleeping, do it. And the cops don't. You can speculate as to why they don't, but they don't. Although elsewhere in the city, homeless people are getting tickets for sleeping. And those tickets go to collection if they're not attended in court, and they also can become misdemeanors if they're not attended in court. It's not a failure to appear that issues, as it is in many cities, because that courts consider would to be too costly, because cops are picking up homeless people on these failures to appear right and left, and it just didn't work because they would come to court and they would say, I haven't got any money to pay this ticket, I'm going to go sleep tonight, you know, do what you have to do, I'll do what I have to do. Well, that's sort of a long recapitulation of what probably all of you out there already know who are regular listeners. Maybe some new folks don't. And I want to remind you the call-in number here is 427-3772 if you'd like to be a part of this discussion. I'm going to read the report that Abby sent me and other Freedom Sleeper activists. This past Tuesday night, we had between 20 and 25 Freedom Sleepers. I slept through most of the night, so I don't have an exact count. That's Abby sleeping through the night. We now have 5 lanterns to light up the place, which we turn off around midnight. More people stop by and ask what's going on with the place being lit up. Also, we now have music playing from when I get there until about 11 p.m. This seems to help the mood. Spontaneous dancing and singing happens. We have more protest signs, but we can always use still more. We did have two police encounters, one around 6 a.m., which she slept through. Thanks to Dolan for handling it. Only one person was woken up who was sleeping around the corner from us. Dolan can give more details on that. And you'd meet Dolan if you came down to the sleep out. And I usually visit the sleep out, and I do interviews there, and I'll probably be playing a few today or Sunday morning when I do another longer version of this show. But they welcome any contributions of blankets, food, sleeping bags, company just showing up, and of course sleepers is something very important that Abby has asked me to put out an appeal for. The second encounter might have been from a complaint, she writes, about the pop tent being in the parking space. Officer Badeo came up, and while he was talking to people about the tent, a fight broke out, an argument between two people, and the officer handled the loud argument quite well. He told the people to stop, didn't write up any tickets, and was not condescending. Anyway, he tried waking someone up on the red bricks. I explained the ordinance, and the people had a right to sleep during the day after 6 a.m. on the city property. I showed him the city signs. He acted surprised and backed off. Sounds like we got a call here. So, hi there. You're on Free Radio with Robert. I'm good. Let me turn up your volume here. I can find a way to do it. All righty, I think I got you. This sounds like Wes White from Salinas.
Yes, sir.
And
you know, part of the Monterey County Homeless Union and Monterey County Homeless Advocates.
Indeed.
Yes.
Yeah, and I know we talked earlier today. You even had plans to come on over and video the trial and maybe do some interviews, but then we noted that the time of the trial changed from 10 a.m. to 1:30, and you weren't able to do it. But you had a meeting today of the Union of the Homeless in Salinas?
Yeah, you know, every night we're still meeting at the flagpole. It's been 90 days, obviously the abysmal failure, but, you know, we're still doing it. So, I got to be down at the flagpole here. I'm down in Chinatown right now on Soledad Street with a couple other people. One guy lost his RV, and he said he just paid $1,900 to get it out, and his fiance actually got a ticket being in a tent, you know, like after 6 a.m. So it was sort of like a dozen people that same day. So I thought it might be great to hear about some of their personal stories.
And because I want to remind listeners that you are a person who's been every night at Salinas City Hall sleeping out with, what, a dozen or more folks there to draw attention to the Salinas ordinance, which is kind of the inverse of the Santa Cruz one, which says you can sleep at night, you can even camp at night with a tent, but you can't set out your stuff during the day. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's a fact. From 6 to 6, in fact, this morning, the officers were driving by real slow, and I think they were drooling, salivating at the mouth to give us some tickets this morning. So,
how many tickets have you gotten in the last 90, I guess it's more than 90 days, 93 or 92?
Well, you know, there was a set of people that got like a dozen tickets a week ago or so, and their court date's on August 13th, and, you know, so like a dozen people got tickets that day, and I think a few more did this last week, or a friend of mine actually got his RV towed with along with 7 or 8 other people without even a sticker, without chalk. You know, no time at all.
Where do they get ticketed for, Wes?
They get ticketed for storage of personal property, blocking the sidewalk, having a rope attached to a fence. You know, I mean, anything that represents any kind of encampment.
And these were not tickets at the actual city hall, in the city hall grounds at night when you were protesting night after night, right?
That's correct. No, we haven't received one ticket at Flagpole yet.
So do I understand that you're sort of in a hurry to get, do you have to be somewhere and you want to, should we move?
Sir.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I brought a couple of people that wanted to tell their story.
Please, yeah, I'd like to hear it.
I wanted you to talk to Walter and Terry, so I'm going to hand it over to them.
Okay.
Revolution. His name's Robert. Robert Ford. He's with Huff, which is the Thomas Norris.
Hey, Walter, this is Robert Norris, and you're on Free Radio. Congratulations and hello.
Yes.
So I hear you, the police have been giving you some trouble.
There you go. Yes. Yes.
So tell me about it. What happened?
The police officer pulled me over one day. I was driving, I'm not too sure where, on the highway or something, pulled me over, told me to get out of my vehicle, and I did, and he said, you're not driving anymore. The vehicle was unregistered, which I, in return, registered the vehicle, and after I did, it cost me $1,900 on the spot to get out.
That's
And the officer wasn't very polite or nothing. They just took the vehicle, left me walking.
So let me understand this. Was the vehicle you were driving unregistered at the time?
Yes, but after that, I got the vehicle out. It cost me $1,900 to get the vehicle out.
How many days was it in the tow yard?
Tow yard was about maybe 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's a racket for sure. At least I think it's a racket in Santa Cruz, a racket in San Francisco. I mean, that's my impression. You know, I don't have the hard data that proves it, but
yes.
So you have your vehicle again, and you sleep in your vehicle at night?
Yes, sir, I do.
Have you been ticketed or hassled by police for doing that?
No.
And are you a supporter of the sleep out at City Hall at night in Salinas?
Yes, I am.
And do you park your vehicle there at night when you sleep?
No. It was on I can't remember where the vehicle was. I was on the highway coming up here, I think it was.
Oh, he's asking where you stay at night.
Or stay at night? Oh, I stay in my vehicle at night.
Yeah, like down here in Chinatown?
Yeah, right over here.
Market Way?
Market Way.
Okay.
Market Way.
And Chinatown is, Walter, has it largely been kind of stripped of people through the police action, or have people come back?
Have people come back to Chinatown?
I'm parked by over here. I live in Chinatown.
Well, okay, as far as how many people are here, do you think there are more people, less people, the same amount of people?
About the same amount. I haven't seen much difference.
Okay.
In an off parking lot for a company.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No one is living.
Okay.
No.
Well, Terry, you got a ticket? Is that correct?
I did.
A ticket for having a tent up after 6 a.m., right?
Right.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I had taken my pills, and I was driving, and I was swerving on the wall.
Oh.
On the
okay. Yeah.
And the officer pulled me over and tested me. And
So what I'm asking about is when you got a ticket right here with the tent, right there the other day?
It was actually on the street.
Yeah. Yeah, for having a tent, right? Up after 6 a.m.?
No, it was...
Yeah. There goes the police officer right now.
Driving on the street after taking my medication.
Okay. So, but do you remember getting a ticket right there when it's the Learning Center?
No.
A week ago?
No, not in the Learning Center.
Okay. Being in your tent? Like at 7 in the morning? That wasn't you?
No.
Okay.
Now, we sleep on my vehicle now.
Okay. Yeah. Have you ever been in a tent?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Because I remember, I'm pretty sure it was you.
Yeah, it was Terry.
Yeah, you got a ticket right there because your tent was still up? And they came through, they did a cleanup last Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like a week and a half ago. Yeah, along with like a dozen other people, right?
Okay.
Do you remember getting that ticket?
An approved area type of thing.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, great question. Possible it was that. Yeah.
Okay.
Matter of fact, that was our tip for my daily to her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So do Terry, Wes, do Terry and Walter join you guys at night at Salinas City Hall to sleep, or do they go elsewhere?
They go elsewhere. They've got their own place.
And is there any outreach to folks at night from the protest? And in other words, does anybody kind of wander down to Chinatown, see how people are doing? Or is it mostly folks kind of stick close to the City Hall area?
No, there's definitely outreach here in Chinatown. I mean, you know, Walter is a board member of our union. So, I mean, you know, we have people who live here in Chinatown and come to the flagpole. People who, you know, come and just visit, actually. You know, I got a friend's family that just comes down and visits. But he lives up here in the Victory Mission. But he'll come over for a couple hours at night. And, you know, but most people are just doing their own thing. There's a different set of people that come from, like, the Methodist Church and people that used to go to the shelter. Those are the people I basically got over there at the flagpole.
So what kind of restroom facilities does the protest have at night?
Well, there's the bus station point a block away, and that's open until 10 o'clock at night, Monday to Friday, and 9 to 3 on Saturdays, so it's no good to us over the weekend. But there's two bars.
So between the hours of 2 and 6, it's Wee Wee and the somewhere else.
Yeah, they need to go to their own place, you know. They need to go before they come, basically. And then they use the restroom before they close.
And what's the situation for public restrooms and homeless access to them for the many people that aren't doing the protest?
Yeah, no, there is no remedy for that. We know that.
So Dorothy's place doesn't allow people to come in at night and use their facilities.
You know, yeah, there's like two porta potties here.
Yeah.
On the diagonal corners. Yeah. Oh, yeah, not even half a block away from each other, actually.
How frequently are they cleaned?
Yeah, go ahead and pull a key out.
Sorry?
Not very much.
Okay.
Once a day, they clean.
Yeah, Monday. I think they do it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Yeah.
I think those are the days they do it. But yeah, that's at least half a mile, three-quarter mile away from the flagpole.
Huh.
And Sacred Heart, we go to church.
Oh, yeah.
We go to eat several times a week, different times a day.
Okay.
And because of that, I give communion there, and they do that at every day at 7 a.m. And some days at 2 and some days at noon, but they do lunch and dinner.
So how's the food?
Yeah, the food is wonderful.
Okay, there you go.
That's good.
But do they allow overnight restrooms at Sacred Heart?
No, just until dinner is over.
Okay. Well, that's still pretty good.
And is there a requirement that you sit through numerous sermons, or can you just go eat there?
You can just go to eat there.
That's good.
Okay, so you don't have to take communion or anything?
No.
That's good.
And how are people treated? Charity treatment can often be very humiliating and degrading, even when the charities don't intend it to be, but that's just how they're organized. How do you feel? I mean, what's your sense of that? Any of the three of you, Walter or Terry or Wes?
I think it's very disgusting.
Okay.
Tell me how.
Well, I got the car back.
He's asking about Sacred Heart or any of the charities.
Do
they treat you well when you go and eat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they do.
That sounds good. Okay.
So this guy, this is for the radio show. Go ahead and give out your radio station and all that. Your PSA you got to do every... whatever, half hour or something.
Oh, no. We're a pirate radio station. We take our time and say, fuck you, to the FCC. So we're pretty outspoken here. So we're talking with Walter, Terry, and Wes of Salinas and trying to find out, you know, how things are over there in terms of the ongoing protest at City Hall. What do you guys call yourselves at the protest?
Well, it's just a flagpole community out there.
Okay, the flagpole community, because there's a flagpole there, I suppose.
That's right.
And
it's a landmark, you know, that's where you meet, is at the flagpole.
So the 4th of July is coming up. Do you intend to present a Declaration of Independence to the City Council or the Board of Supervisors, whoever you know, whether bureaucrats are hanging out there?
I'd say we're pretty dependent on the system at this point. I'm not ready to secede from the union just yet.
I see. So what can people do to be helpful to, you know, to support the flagpole community?
You can come and visit us every night. We need food. We need gas money. We need more blankets and tents.
Bring boxes.
You can come and stay overnight. Bring food. Yeah, bring in a tent and sleeping bag. It's a pretty chill community. Most of the time we go to bed at 10 and people are quiet through the night. Most people behave. And some suckers have to go.
Hmm. So you kind of police yourselves, so to speak?
Yes. Yeah, we actually have a set of rules that consistent residents have signed. And, they're responsible for their guests, too.
And so what's your average evening attendance?
We're doing 25 to 30 people right now. And that's up from, like, last week where we were at 20. 25, now we're at 25 to 30.
And
so it's increasing, and more people are losing stuff, so then they have nothing, and that's one of the reasons that a couple people have come down.
I'm parked on the side over here.
Okay, good. I'm glad you got your car back, man.
Oh, I am too. It cost me a lot of money.
In Santa Cruz, we have a lot of homeless on homeless theft or theft from homeless people. How's that in Salinas?
No. Theft. Homeless stealing from homeless.
Yeah.
Does that happen much, at the protest or in Chinatown?
Not anywhere at the flagpole, but I'm sure, elsewhere it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a foam mat taken one day, but, not much. And sometimes they take off a blanket. But I figure they must need it more than I do.
So are people, I think I suggested this to you one time, are people storing their stuff in your vehicle nearby during the day so they can come pick it up again at night, or is...
If it's stored in my vehicle, they can hold on to it, but... there's no instant access. There's a parking lot across the street, but you need a permit for that. And along the street's like a two-hour parking limit. So, there is no place to leave it in the day.
Hmm, interesting. So what you got to do is get a permit, get somebody across the street to park their vehicle there, and then...
The permit is city property for city employees. Yeah. So unless you're a city employee, you don't get a permit.
Well, you could join City Hall, Wes. Come on.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, maybe they get, and you get a salary for it as well. Of course, you might be assigned to removing...
Okay, well, it's too short, but I got to get going.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, I thank you. Thank all three of you for being on the air. And keep us advised as to what's happening. The sleepout over here has the same need to, get more people to stay, to be supportive. It's the people who are doing it, the main people are getting exhausted, and they need some support. So
thank you for listening. God bless you.
Oh yeah, and good luck to you too. And
thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure.
We need more support from the legal side. Yeah. And the radio side, the press side. Right. Hey Sammy.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, Bob. We'll see you later.
And that was a report from Salinas from the flagpole community, as they call themselves. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, Freak Radio. And the name of the show you're listening to is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Call-in number is 427-3772. And phone lines are now open in case you'd like to call in. And I'm here to take calls. I think I'm going to play a little... What am I going to do here? Let's see. I'm going to play an update from Carol Denny from Berkeley. I played some of this before, I believe, but I didn't play the whole thing. Let's see what she has to say. She's an activist who's a writer and a singer. She's got some great songs. I may even be able to find one online for her, but let's hear her interview, and then we'll hear one of her songs. Stay tuned.
I'm here with Carol Denny of Berkeley, a longtime activist, and you got a report for us, Carol.
Well, I guess so. I don't know the most about this, but it's...
I'm here with Carol Denny of Berkeley, a longtime activist, and you got a report for us, Carol.
Well, I guess so. I don't know the most about this, but it's another clearing of a camp of people down near Gilman. And probably this sounds like the same story that everybody's heard over and over again. And it is. It's just that it's, to me, more proof of the same failed policies. You know, they took out the people out of Albany Bulb and pretended they were going to give them housing, and most people know what they ended up with, which some weird little very temporary trailers down close to the Albany Bulb, and then even those were gone. So what just happened was a lot of the people who, you know, were absent any housing were collecting around the overpass near Gilman Street in Berkeley, and they've been fencing off certain areas, trying to dedicate the areas down there to other purposes to kind of displace people. And finally, they just went in and raided it. They did that about 3 days ago. So I'm just hearing about it today, and I'm very upset about it. I guess I felt like we had a lot of heat and focus several months ago. Maybe it's always like that because it's winter and so forth, but you know, they came in and did that just a few days ago, and I'm not seeing we're not very well organized to react. But I just thought I'd tell people who might be listening to your show that over and over again, they're just kind of herding people around. What generally happens after that is predictably more people will show up, I don't know, wherever they can find a little place to harbor, some parking lot or some place along the freeway, and it just becomes harder to organize people, harder to track who's where and who needs help. So that just happened, and it's making me very sad.
Mm-hmm.
We're still trying to organize to help the Redemption Center, Alliance Redemption, to help people who want to recycle cans and bottles, but that's also something that's about to run out of, I guess, a settlement agreement end of permit. So that's not going well.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, I do have some. I have some. I think issues of your pepper spray times, which I'm bringing along. I finally found them. So if I run into you today or at some future day, I'll pass them on to you.
Oh, terrific. That's wonderful. I've looked in vain for back issues that I no longer have. Vain is probably the right word. At some point, as an effort to check my own vanity, I just throw things away.
Pepper Spray Times is a both a hard copy and an online satirical sheet in color, actually, which Carol's been writing for 20 years, more or less. Actually, I think it is at least 20 years. And it, I think, brilliantly and effectively satirizes Berkeley politicians and bureaucrats and real estate interests and things of that sort. And also it satirizes those who are attacking homeless people through different hypocritical, pseudo-liberal claims that they're actually trying to help homeless people by driving them away or by making more restrictive laws. It's really cleaning up the situation or some such thing. You can find her Pepper Spray Times online at the Berkeley Daily Planet, which is I think it's a weekly or an occasionally, I'm not sure how frequently it comes out. And you can also just look up Pepper Spray Times. She's the only Pepper Spray Times person online. I recommend you check it out.
Apparently threw away my master copies of a lot of old issues. And that was probably not my best move, but...
No, you blew it. So we're just going to have to raid, you know, Wisconsin State University, as I said in an email to you. Or people can find, if they can get past the archaic procedures there, access to your stuff, right?
Well, yeah, and here's to their archaic procedures, because they'll probably be the last living link to a lot of actual paper at some point in time. I don't know if you heard, like, one of the most interesting things happening is the continuous firing of police chiefs in Oakland, and they just now fired the interim chief, who's like the fifth guy in a handful of years to be chief of this department. And what the mayor said, it's Mayor Libby Schaaf now. She calls it a toxic, what did she say? She called it a toxic frat house, because the most recent scandal had to do with police officers having sex with an underage prostitute. And then when she was sort of technically of the age of consent, they continued to sort of pass her around between them. This goes past the Oakland Police Department. Apparently there's at least three police departments implicated in basically having her as a prostitute, and then giving her insider information about undercover prostitution busts. So it gets bigger by the day. It's really something. But what's funny is, I mean, the funniest thing I've seen about it, I'm always looking for the humor in these things, is that instead of appointing yet another interim police chief, the mayor of Oakland has appointed a civilian. Who is it? She's appointed, a city administrator, Sabrina Landreth, who has zero experience as a police officer, mind you.
But may well be a better bet than one of the blue coat of silence inside the department. I've been following that story in the paper as well. After the most recent rotating police chief in, Sean Wendt, resigned. It was about a week ago. She appointed this guy, Farrow, and then he resigned. And, of course, the private police chief who was appointed, I don't know, I think it was a year ago or 6 months ago. And there's all this talk about, we're going to retrain the police, we're going to, in de-escalation tactics and so forth. And then they go and shoot three people, unarmed people, well, over a period of 6 months. And it's the real issue, of course, is holding them accountable. And none of the actions taken in Oakland hold the police officers accountable. There is, however, a couple lawsuits happening. For example, in the Mission District, relatives of a homeless man, I'm reading from the Chronicle, fatally shot in April by a pair of San Francisco police officers who quickly opened, this is across the bay in San Francisco, opened fire on him after they spotted him on a Mission District street, allegedly armed with a knife. The relatives filed a wrongful death claim against the city Friday. The claim centers on the speed with which the officers resorted to deadly force. Video footage, first obtained by the Chronicle, actually doing some reporting, believe it or not. I guess it sells these days as police scandals escalate, or the visibility of police scandals escalates. The video footage first obtained by the Chronicle showed less than 30 seconds elapsed between the time officers left their squad cars and when they fired seven bullets at 45-year-old Luis Gongora. The claim is a precursor to a lawsuit against the city, the family's attorney said. The confrontation between Gongora and the officer, Sergeant Nate Steger, and Officer Michael Malone, began when city homeless outreach workers called police on April 7th to report that a man was holding a knife at a homeless encampment on Shotwell at 18th Street. Although a spokesman for the police department declined to comment on the allegation made in the family's claim, police cited witness statements at a news conference a day after that in the shooting that Gongora lunged at Steger and Malone with a 13-inch kitchen knife in his hand. But civil rights attorney John Burris, who is representing the family, cited other witnesses who saw Gongora sitting down with his back against a wall when the officers arrived, and said he did not use the knife in an aggressive way and dropped it after the officers initially shot him with a beanbag round. Three witnesses also told the Chronicle, and they actually went out and interviewed witnesses, amazing, the Chronicle, and not just take the get spoon-fed from the police department, that Gongora did not appear to threaten the officers. Surveillance footage of the encounter does not show Gongora in the frame, but officers can be heard shouting at him to get on the ground and seconds later put that down before shooting him. You might say, well, doesn't that indicate that he was threatening them? And the answer is not necessarily. Police... I'm trying to remember the occasion when I actually it happened to me or someone near me were shouting. And I wonder if they're not trained or advised by their fellow officers to shout, stop resisting, even when the individual in question is not resisting or simply is asking, what am I being arrested for? I want to talk to your sergeant. I have a physical problem that means if you put your hands on my back, you're going to break my arm or create a problem. In other words, I'm wondering if it isn't standard issue for the police department to say, stop resisting, stop resisting. And I don't, I have no paper trail on that and no immediate testimony about recent instances at the Santa Cruz Police Department. But I would encourage people to keep their eyes open when they see police actions happening in town. Don't go away. Pull out your cell phone if it has video capability or even if it doesn't, because if it looks like you're videoing, that may have an impact as well. And listen and see what they say and document it and post it on your Facebook page or YouTube or Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is what I use when I write anyway. Gongora posed an immediate and deadly threat, and our officers' use of lethal force was necessary and legally justified, Matt Dorsey, a spokesman for City Attorney Dennis Herrera, said Friday. And, of course, he's paid to defend the police department. He may be true, may not be true. Burris, however, said Steiger, Burris is the attorney making the lawsuit claim on behalf of the relatives of the murdered man. Burris, however, said Steiger and Malone ignored their training to create time and distance between themselves and the man, instead escalating the situation into a lethal encounter. When you have a person theoretically with an edged weapon, you don't rush at the person, Burris said. Just because you have a knife does not mean you have a death warrant. Gongora, born in Mexico, immigrated to the U.S. about 14 years ago, worked as a dishwasher on Mills Diner at Mission and 4th Streets for the better part of a decade to make money for his wife and three children in the state of Yucatan. He spoke Mayan predominantly, some Spanish, and very little English, and probably didn't understand the officer's commands, his family said at a news conference, to announce the filing of their claim. Officer Carlos Manfredi, perhaps, a police spokesman said Friday the department's investigation of the shooting was completed and has been passed along to the DA's office. Prosecutors are still conducting a parallel investigation and have not determined whether to charge the officers. Of course, today, I'm told, was the day that another person involved in the death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore was exonerated by a jury, which some might say, well, see, they weren't guilty. But I think, unfortunately, we have to really examine the evidence ourselves and not leave it to 12 individuals. That's the system we have, or that we're born into and is imposed upon us. But it often is not fair, based upon the composition of the juries, based upon the procedures used in the trial, based upon the kind of prestige and weight that police testimony is given, based upon the partiality of the judges and their tendency to work with prosecutors and police. At least that's my experience in Santa Cruz. The officers who did the shooting were placed on paid leave. This is in San Francisco after the shooting, but since have returned to full duty, said Officer Grace Gatpenbein, a police spokeswoman. Critics said the police did not follow a proposed use of force policy developed after the shooting death of Mario Woods in December that emphasizes communication, de-escalation, proportionality of response, and the preservation of human life. The police commission will vote on the proposal Wednesday. A month after Gongora's death, a Bayview police sergeant fatally shot 29-year-old Jessica Williams, who had been in and out of homelessness after she allegedly tried to flee in a stolen vehicle. The shooting prompted Mayor Ed Lee to ask for the resignation of Greg Sir, who stepped down as police chief hours after the woman was killed. Of course, they aren't prosecuting the officers who killed her, are they? As far as I know, they're not. And I want to correct something. The Oakland resignation of the firing of one police chief after another has happened in sort of the dust-up coming after racist emails and the revelation of an underage prostitute being passed around by the officers in return for favors from the cops. And in San Francisco, the issue was the murder of three people, unarmed people, over a course of 6 months, where Greg Sir, the police chief, claimed he was going to be teaching his officers de-escalating tactics, but apparently he's not teaching them very well. Again, the whole focus on retraining the officers is one that makes me very skeptical. It seems to me the best retraining is to make it clear to police that if they murder people without cause, they're going to be held accountable in at least the same way that the court system, wretched as it is, supposedly holds accountable those most usually disproportionately punishing people of color, and a kind of a new slavery system that's been created over the last 20 years. Hats off to the Clintons and their massive increase in police activity and police power. And I guess the Supreme Court can also be given a pat on the back for that one. And the community can be held to blame, too, for not taking action to stop this, as activists with Black Lives Matter are now trying to do, although I haven't heard much from them nor researched them much recently. Here's a little thing from Carol Denny. Life is much better in jail. I don't know if I've ever heard this before. It's on YouTube.
Father paying my bail. I was a junkie, I lived on the street. I had no money and nothing to eat. A kindly policeman came by one fine day and changed my perspective on living that way. In jail, don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. I had no direction when I was a kid. I loved to be free, didn't care what I did. My civil rights were just weighing me down, but now getting busted has turned me around. In jail, don't bother paying my bail. Me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. My civil liberties, I have to say, just clouded my judgment and got in my way. Pull up your bootstraps and reach for the stars. Life is much better by far behind bars. In jail, in jail, my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. I was a tree sitter up in the grove. They told me to leave, but I just wouldn't move. I had no respect for the cops till I saw they could take me to jail for no reason at all. To jail, don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. I walked the picket line there at my job with Susie and Sally and Barney and Bob. Management said they respected our right, but just for good measure, we'd all spend the night in jail, in jail.
dog. The sun doesn't shine without my tot of grog. I love a beer sitting next to my plate, but now I believe I am getting it straight. In jail, don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail.
Down here on Pacific Avenue in front of Surf Life and the Santa Cruz Roofing Company, looking at the criminal displays of Alex and Joff again.
Oh, goodness.
Outside the blue boxes. As
look at
usual.
You. Nice. Let me look at the shirt you're wearing.
Oh, thank you.
Listeners wouldn't otherwise know. Robert's got on a very custom, handcrafted looking shirt that has a portrait of a man draped in the American flag, walking on bones, human bones, sort of underfoot. And
in honor of the 4th of July coming up.
And all those who've gone before, I presume?
Well, and all those who will come after.
And all those who will come after. Well,
and I will probably go into this in detail, but Alex and Joff are two artists on Pacific Avenue who have been arrested three times for displaying their artwork outside the blue bracketed areas called the blue boxes or exempt zones, created by City Council a couple years ago and now reaffirmed by City Council, that will become more stringent on June 24th, tomorrow. I think that's the month from the time when the second reading happened at City Council, though. Might be today, even, that that happens. On the 24th, there will also be a ban on selling anything or displaying anything or creating anything on Pacific Avenue that is textile or jewelry-oriented, massaging, or face painting. All these things will become illegal. And you can't do them inside the blue bracketed area, the blue boxes, outside the blue boxes, anywhere on Pacific Avenue or the side streets. And this is an attempt to cleanse and purify the downtown area and make it more family-friendly. Actually, I don't think that was a word used at City Council. They had a lot of really ridiculous claims as to what they were doing, but in fact, the main thing seemed to be that some merchants resented having jewelers on the streets and claimed that they were getting away with free sales and taking away their business. And it's possible some of their business was taken away, but I suspect some more was created by the fact that there were such a kind of colorful display on the sidewalks. That's one of the things that we, at least I continue to hear from people, draws people to the Pacific Avenue area, the Santa Cruz area. Although I've never, you know, I don't think anyone's ever done any real study on that. I'm not quite sure how you would. By the way, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. Freakradio.org is where we're streaming on the internet. And these shows are archived in case you tune in late and you really want to hear what happened earlier in the show, or you want to go back and hear old shows, some of which are actually, you can read what's on the shows for some of them. Go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. Huff is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group of housed and homeless activists who are we do a lot of talking. We do a little bit of writing. Some of us are supporters of the Freedom Sleepers. And we are also, I do a lot of Public Records Act requests and post announcements on alternate media about stuff happening. And occasionally I stand up to the police when I think they're being abusive or try to expose what they're doing, as the Freedom Sleepers do every Tuesday night in Santa Cruz. Though I believe that one of the principal Freedom Sleepers, Abby Samuels, probably say she's been successful in negotiating with Vice Chief, or is it Deputy Chief Martinez, who apparently gave her a bit of interesting information the other day. I don't think I'm telling tales out of school by saying this. One of the concerns I had last week at my motions hearing to get the police to cough up the video that they'd done of the Freedom Sleepers, specifically of me and of other Freedom Sleepers on the night when I was ticketed for being in a closed area after 10 o'clock at night. I was there essentially recording what the police were doing. I was on the trail and off the trail of the area going through the parks. And I wanted to get evidence that I advised the police that they were violating my rights for a couple of reasons. First, it's the city hall, which is the center of government, and has no right to be closed down at night to peaceful presence there, not even protesting. You should be able to be there, provided you're not violating any other law, particularly since it's, as I said earlier in the show, the center of city government. Secondly, I was on a path through the city so-called closed area, where it's legal to be. If you're on the path, that's a kind of an exempt zone for going through the city hall area. At least that's my interpretation of the ordinance. And then finally, and perhaps most important and most telling, and that's going to be the issue that's going to come up tomorrow most strongly, at 1:30 at City Hall, I should say, sorry, at the courts at 701 Ocean Street, is that the only place in the city that agendas were posted for the public meetings was at the City Hall area inside this forbidden zone. And agendas are by law required to be accessible 24 hours a day, at least during the 72-hour period before any of the meetings that are being agendized, so that you, and remember, the public can walk in and read what's coming up on that particular city council meeting or subcommittee meeting or commission meeting, whatever. Police were not allowing us to do that. And in so doing, they were breaking the law, and by issuing us citations, that I am assuming indicates a complete defense. Now, obviously, the city attorney didn't think so because he didn't present any argument about that, but he will be arguing tomorrow something which we're not aware of because he didn't really respond to our papers at all. He just was going to go to court, and that's where he'll be. This is a city attorney that I've had a lot of trouble with in other ways. He seems really determined to... I don't know about stick it to other activists, but he certainly has been avoiding the Public Records Act requests I've made. One of the things that Martinez told Abby Samuels, according to her account, is that the reason that they aren't giving the videos to us is that they destroy the videos after they're made because these are just infraction offenses. That is to say, the lowest kind of offense where you can't really, there's not a jail term possible, but you may have to pay a substantial fine, go to court numerous times, and you are potentially at risk for jail if you don't do that, if you don't go to court. So it's not that minor, and for homeless people all over the city, it's not minor at all, because infractions are the major kind of crime that they face, a major kind of prosecution, that their survival behavior is labeled criminal, and the criminal code that is used against them is the infraction code. So to say that the police department destroys all video of infractions after it's made, and it was originally made just to help police write their reports, is... And I haven't got the stats for those. I heard from an attorney, though. I mean, I haven't got the references as to what particular legal code is violated here. But I think that destruction of evidence is, if a civilian does it, it's a crime. If a police officer does it, apparently it's business as usual. And I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. But I still think it's worth exposing and denouncing, and even taking up to some nervous judge who doesn't want to appear to be completely unconstitutional 24 hours a day, which doesn't seem to bother Judge Maricanda, because he accepted this ridiculous argument from the city attorney, who also said that he was told by the police that they weren't really videoing, they were pretending to video in order to intimidate us and get us to act better. And I would have we did attempt to subpoena the police officers involved, and we couldn't do so because they were on vacation, or one of them was anyway, David Forbes. We also attempted to subpoena Bren Lehrer, who is the city administrator and clerk, who, if not the driving force, it certainly is the knowledgeable force behind the city's decision to create an additional display device of agendas outside the forbidden 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. don't be there after 10 p.m. zone. And the city attorney, Reed Gallagly, declined, or is it Gallagly? I apologize. I'm going to be doing that for some time. He refused to direct her to go to court, and so it'll just be two cops and me and these two attorneys tomorrow at 1:30, unless something unusual happens. But it'll be interesting, and I'll be there. But the the notion that the police have the right to destroy evidence on a whim because they're not using it for their own records is ridiculous. I mean, the defense has the right to evidence even in these minor cases. Maybe the attorneys have not been dealing with this because they don't get paid usually to go after infractions. But homeless people, the most crimes that homeless people are accused of are infraction crimes. And it's what Deputy Police Chief Steve Clark famously or infamously described as the homeless crime wave in the Poganip by claiming that so much of the police resources, some 30 or 40% or some such thing of the citations, were by homeless criminals in the Poganip. And the crimes were sleeping, being in the park after dark, and smoking. That's the crime wave that he used to help create the hysteria, along with Take Back Santa Cruz's needle hysteria, around the creating the Public Safety Task Force. Or Public Hysteria Task Farce, as I called it. So let's hear some more from Alex and Joff, who are out there on the sidewalk dealing with, I guess tomorrow they'll for sure be dealing with a law that they've been violating, even the previous law. They don't move along every hour, as the law says they're supposed to. Another really outrageous attempt to restrict First Amendment rights. It's not that you have a right to occupy the sidewalk forever, but unless there's a need to move along, somebody else wants the thing. There was a voluntary code that many claim worked very well prior to the attempt to essentially give merchants and hecklers, if you want to call them, a veto power over who could be where, based on their sense. They can get people to move along at will, and now you're going to have to move along after 61 minutes, or you face an immediate $250 ticket, depending on the preference of the police officer. So, let's hear some more from Alex and Joff, who, as I said, have gone to jail three times for this. They beat it once in court, surprisingly enough, and their two more recent cases haven't come up yet.
Well, we're all walking around in a bag of bones like that, so that's a good universal symbol. I got a lot of that in my art.
That's the host spot.
Look,
yeah.
There it is. He transmorphed.
I may have actually. Is that a new one? I don't know.
That's semi-new.
I think this is new.
This, no, that's classic. This one's new.
This is new. I may have to.
A couple on the back side.
This looks.
Too.
This could be new.
I'm not sure where you're at on your.
Not sure either.
I have a couple questions for you, sir.
Go for it.
Just one. When is this new law hitting now?
Well, it's June 24th, as I understand it, from Scott Collins, who is the evil genius, or one of them, behind the law.
You're giving genius to? Have you listened to the man speak?
Unfortunately, I have, yes, on numerous occasions.
You may be a genius and just have poor faculty with the English language. I guess both could be true, so.
Well.
We won't preclude him.
That could be. I've gotten more emails from him than direct conversations.
Maybe you imply that his genius was at being evil? Is that what you're implying?
That was, in fact, what I was saying, yes.
Just to clarify.
So I see you're here in front of the Surf Life, and are you and Joffre here with your displays as ever? No hassles from hosts or police?
No, I haven't even seen them today, so we haven't been out here that long. I see they're parked down the road. No, they walked around yesterday and walked by, so
no,
they haven't done anything since May 1st. It was the last negative interaction, or however you want to put it.
Have the tickets appeared yet? Have you gotten any notices?
No, not yet.
They should be coming up soon, if they're going to come up at all, because usually there's a two-month delay. You got them in April and May, so that should be June or July. Maybe July will be your ticket time. And, of course, they made those infractions rather than misdemeanors, so they're still, they're behind on their infractions. What have you seen out here that struck you? Anything recently that you think of any interest?
Well, we're all just kind of waiting for what's going to happen when they tell a large group of people who previously were told they could do their activity in a blue box. Now they're going to be told they can't be here, period. And that's not myself, because they're making a division between what is and isn't acceptable art, and I'm on the side of the division of what's acceptable, though what will be restricted. So I won't be told I can't be here.
Just inside the blue box?
Or? Yes, and various other restrictions, as I'm sure everyone's familiar with by now. But more importantly, I think at the moment, and what's pertinent, is that there's another almost a fairly sizable group of individuals who I'm familiar with out here who
T-shirts, jewelry.
Who are, there's a lot of activity out here, and all I'm saying is that I know that some of the people out here who do activity have expressed to me that they consider that their art and religion in some cases, what they're doing with various activities that they engage in out here, and so they are not happy with the way they've been designated, and to call what they're doing as not being art or their religious expression being respected. So I am curious, as is everyone, I think, to see what form the enforcement takes on the, you say, the 24th, and that came from Scott Collins, you said? We kind of derailed there.
It's also a month after the law was passed.
So 30 or 31 days? Is that why you said 24th or 25th?
23rd or 24th.
Since 23rd or 24th.
May has 31 days.
So that's Wednesday or Thursday.
Or else they're going to wait a while and, warn
just
people.
See what happens probably on day one. It's probably not a lot of point coming out with some giant.
However, they've gone after some people already warning them, so I'm not sure
really?
If they're going to.
About a new thing about the jewelry?
Not about a new thing, but outside the blue boxes.
Oh, well.
That's
yeah.
Sort of the old thing.
I saw a couple of. This was just too much for me. This has to just be made record of, though, because this is the level it's gotten to. And this really was a solidification of, wow, this really is what it's come to, that this is happening.
It wasn't clear how much of this. It seems to me that he saw me recording all of this, and I don't know that I'm going to have to review this briefly to see if he really wants me to be doing this on the record. I don't think it's a problem, but let's listen to a little Carol Denny, her song Beans, while I'm doing some reviewing.
Just a simple pot of beans, enough to keep a body warm. Nothing elegant, although it seems a pot of beans has irresistible charm. Just a simple stovetop meal, just enough to share with friends. Nothing brightens up a lonely room like beans. That's how every day should end. Now lentils do have charm. No, you mustn't get me wrong, but none of those other foods evoke the moods that can be immortalized in song. The ambrosia of my dreams joyous daily fare, for nothing pleases like a pot of beans, a simple pot of beans to share.
Mm-hmm. Managing my diabetes has been a struggle.
I play the street fairs, I play from the heart. Fiddle and guitar and squeeze box for art. We play for the old folks, we play for the bums, but we don't play for smokers, cause smokers are scum. Smokers are scum, smokers are scum. They know they're addicted, they know smoking's dumb. They know that exposure is deadly to us, but they're hoping we're stupid and won't make a fuss. Smokers are addicts, they know smoking kills, but they're too friggin' lazy to smoke somewhere else. What's the big problem with walking away? I wish their smoking would kill them today. Smokers are fools, smokers are fools. They shill for tobacco like industry tools, making us share their addictions of ours. Take your stupid cigarette and shove it up your dumb light up near me, because if you do, I've got a squirt gun and my aim is true. Folks think they're helpless, but I say they're not. Pick up some fox spray, give smokers a shot. Smokers are stupid and ugly and dumb. Smokers expose you because they think it's fun. They will smoke elsewhere because it's too tough. Smoking will kill them, but not fast enough. It gets in your clothing, it gets in your hair. Cause asthma, cause cancer, smokers don't care. The deep inconvenience of walking away is too hard for smokers, and that's why I say, pick up some bug spray, some air freshener too. Don't let a smoker light up next to you. Their rights have ended where your lungs begin. Pick up your squirt gun and baby you win. They'll poison your street gig, they'll poison your lungs. They won't put on patches or just chew some gum. They're screwed up and stupid and ugly and dumb. They'll poison their mothers cause smokers are scum. Be glad it's just bug spray instead of a gun. They'll poison their mothers cause smokers are scum.
And that's Smokers Are Scum from Carol Denny's A Toast to the Union. You can find it on YouTube. Carol Denny is spelled D-E-N-N-E-Y. And at some point I was interested in having a debate between Carol Denny and Becky Johnson on the issue of secondhand smoke. But that may yet be, well, it's in the future if it's going to happen at all. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is a call-in show with no call-ins at the moment, but you can, if you want, you can be the first call-in today, actually the second, I'm sorry, there was a call-in from Salinas, that was arranged, but you can be spontaneous and call in spontaneously, and the number is 427-3772. Let's hear some more from Alex and Joff. I have vetted the audio, and it sounds fine. I don't think there's any big secrets here, and so I'm going to continue playing the interview that the ever-loquacious Alex has given us. That's got means talkative for all you dictionary lovers or dictionary fearers or whatever.
Level it's gone to, and this really was a solidification of wow, this really is what it's come to, that this is happening. The local hospitality employees who
are still hospitality.
Well, some of them are actually nice, but they're nice, but they have been charged with certain operatives in their job, and if they want to keep their job and keep feeding their family, then they have to abide by this. And I have
feed
some,
their family some other way.
Probably true, but nonetheless, they're trying to survive. So I try to fix the system and not worry about the peoples that get ensnared in it generally. But point being, it's gotten to the point out here where I was pulling up the other day to get
to come out here, and I noticed there was a guy with a melodica, which, if you don't know what that is just a small wind-powered, you just blow into a tube, and it makes a little, there's a little keyboard-like interface, and that makes them little reeds blow, and it kind of sounds like a harmonica. It's about the volume of a harmonica, so for reference, that's what we're dealing with here, but it's a little keyboardy thing. Anyway, this guy who I ended up talking to, and happens to be a student, a teacher of music locally, and he was playing this melodica, and I pull up right at the same time that a couple of these hospitality folks notice him playing the melodica. He was sitting on a bench and he was playing it. And he did not have any case out. He was not, now, not that this should matter, by the way, but this designation has been made by them, so whatever. He was just sitting on a bench with a melodica playing it. He had no case out. There was no sign. There was no attempt to do anything other than sit peacefully by himself and play his instrument. And this was enough of an activity that they saw fit to come over and begin to try to deliver information telling him about they had their pamphlet and whatever. And I pretty much was like, this is too much. And I was like, yeah, they're going to tell you that you need to be there, and I'd recommend you just thank them for their information and tell them to have a nice day. And it was interesting. I'm not going to identify the individual, but the hospitality person, and this is lends credence to what I said a minute ago about the individuals, said what he said, which I thought was kind of funny. I think they know the ship's sinking, and so he was, you know, or I let the cat out of the bag on the sex, but oh well, either way.
They are actually leaving. A hospitality will be replaced by Parks and Rec.
That's the other question. That remains to be seen. I haven't seen any.
It's in the budget, let's put it that way.
Yeah, but I mean, if that's supposed to be simultaneous with the enforcement of the law, then where are they? You would think they would have been brought around.
Well, it might not be simultaneous, but it's going to happen if, you know, if what the city council, there's not clear what the actual date is, but they are replacing hospitality with Parks and Rec. And what that means is they can issue stay away orders without even taking you to court.
Well, that will be hilarious if that happens.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would certainly be interesting.
Because violating a stay away order is up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine.
Wow. Well, we'll cross that bridge if and when we get to it.
Mr. Outside the Blue Box Man.
We'll have to. How does a stay away order? Are you telling me that the park rangers have like a greater authority than the police to issue order? Like, how do you get to that conclusion there on the stay away order?
It's anyone, either the police or the park rangers can issue it if you are inside a forbidden zone, which is actually designated as those specifically set up. All right, you two, get a job.
Hi.
Get a job. Get a job.
Hey, as you two know, I keep it friendly with everyone, but the views of Mr. Norris do not necessarily reflect the views of the art guy. Just so you all know, as always.
Get a job. Thank you very much. Please move along. Go ahead. Sorry, I don't appreciate you.
That's fine.
And, of course, I was addressing the head of the hospitality or hospitality squad, and one of her young trainees or workers. And I think they've created a lot of pain and problems on Pacific Avenue and arrogantly exercised a lot of illegitimate power, even though it is their job to do that. And I don't have a lot of sympathy for that argument. And I think it's relevant and appropriate to call them out because it's an abusive function that they're out there doing. They're a little merchant goon squad telling people to move along or you'll get a ticket, as though that had some justification or had something to do with any real health and safety issue, or, you know, using the "we're just enforcing the rules" approach, which is actually what they are doing. They're enforcing laws passed by the city council. Go talk to the city council. No, the city council isn't on the sidewalk. Unfortunately, it's the people who do take rather shitty wages, I imagine, for this job to enforce these crappy rules. But that's always the way, whether you're talking about the more extreme instances of concentration camps or police actions in attacking labor or attacking activists. These are individuals who choose to take that kind of a job. And some of it they do, it's not, you can do it, you know, in the 30s, I think, maybe even still. I don't know. It's hard to hear of any police officers who are starving these days. But I'm not an expert on police officers in poor communities, other than the fact that they usually don't live in those communities and they go and police them from the outside. And there's a lot of concern in the poor communities about how police are behaving and the murderous tolls that are created annually by that. You know, I was talking about the there's this big brouhaha about assault weapons and shootings and, you know, mass killings. And I was finding myself wondering how many people are killed with police weapons compared with, let's say, assault weapons. And I know that, you know, the police on occasion no doubt do use assault weapons, although it's not, I think, a normal part of what they do. But they are equipped with all that stuff and ready to go. And that makes me very nervous, because if we ever have mass protests around Wells Fargo Bank's rip-off policies or, you know, the behaviors of law enforcement in shooting down unarmed people, as has happened in other areas, they have the machinery, they have the weaponry to cause some pretty heavy damage, and also, more important, to intimidate people from doing the kind of organizing and acting up and even acting out that has been successful in creating political changes in some other countries. I don't know about radical change. Usually they throw out one gang of crooks and they put in another, or a bunch of neoliberals that were originally funded by, you know, Western interests to begin with. Anyway, let's hear some more of Alex.
That's fine.
That's fine. You have
those
right.
Two in particular have always been nice to me, in particular, extra, and I can, you know,
ask how they've been with other people.
Yeah. We're still human beings, and I can only speak for myself, but I try to keep a, I find it, let me put it this way, I don't care, this is what you get with me. I find it useful in life that even if you're dealing with someone who you don't agree with, that if you treat them with a modicum of respect,
that's
you're more likely...
what the issue is. The issue is not that I don't agree with them. The issue is their function and what they're doing on Pacific Avenue. That's the problem.
Right.
It's not that I disagree with their opinions. It's I've observed them harassing and hurting other people. They need to be identified as far as I'm concerned.
Those two? You've seen
Yes. She runs the hosts.
Right.
I've seen her here for years. I mean, she oversees the whole thing. Now, she won't be... And you were asking a previous question about the Parks and Rec, which is only stay away orders can only be given in those areas that are forbidden areas. Such
what
as,
does that mean?
Well, as any areas...
Downtown Santa Cruz is a forbidden area? Is that what you're trying to say?
Insofar as it's a Park and Rec management area. If they manage it and you violate one of their ordinances...
Is this a Parks and Rec ordinance?
No, it doesn't have to be a Parks and Rec... Yes, it's a Parks and Rec ordinance that allows them to cover these areas. But it means any infraction of any kind given in a person in those areas can, either by a police officer or a Parks and Rec officer, result in an immediate one-day stay-away order for 24 hours. If you violate that order, that is a fine of up to $1,000 and a year in jail. If you get a second infraction, either in that area or in some area, they can give you, it has to be within a week, they can give you a week's stay-away order, which if within a week you violate that, it's a $1,000 fine or a year in jail. And if you get another infraction somewhere else, they can give you a month stay-away order. It's an amazing law that was passed 2 years ago.
The $1,000 or you're in jail is at your discretion?
It is.
Or theirs.
If they find that you are here within the 24-hour period that they themselves, without any court proceedings, have given you, that is a crime punishable by up to a year in jail and $1,000.
They decide that on the spot, is what you're saying.
Well, they decide whether they're going to ticket you on the spot. Hey, go for it. I will leave you to your good work for the moment.
Well, that's interesting information. Certainly, there's a lot of...
And to clarify, the fine and the amount of money and the amount of jail time, if any, or probation time, would be decided by the judge after you're found guilty in a jury trial, if they bother to take you to trial for it. It's more, I think, of an intimidation factor that has been quite successful in stopping mass protests that may involve direct civil disobedience. That's my feeling looking at the scene for the last few years. I don't have, again, hard evidence. But that's also the opinion of others. I talked to Noah, an activist who was high profile in the Occupy movement and who isn't these days, although he said he would return if there were another Occupy action. but he does think that there's been the tone of political protest has been significantly dampened and repressed here. And why is that so? I think because of, to some extent, the unleashing of the police. For those who saw the end of the Occupy movement, which was happening all over the country, it wasn't crushed because of massive criminal behavior by activists. Even the occupation of a bank, a vacant bank building, the River Street, 75 River Street occupation, at best involved some vandalism against one of the major profiteers and ripoff artists of the century, Wells Fargo Bank, you know, who is... I'm not sure if you'd say they've acknowledged responsibility, but they've been held to be responsible for massive foreclosures across the country and also foreclosures in Santa Cruz. I don't know how many, but there have been numerous foreclosures. And Wells Fargo is one of the largest banks involved in that whole process. And then, of course, they got paid back for it by the Obama regime. So I'm going to play now sort of as a... Well, I guess there's a little more to be played by the... on the, or maybe I'm at the end of this particular number. Let me take a look here. Let's see. No, I got a little more to go.
Information we learn in the days ahead.
I believe I'm accurate, but you should check it out.
I'll be a fairly regular face out here in the coming days, so I'm sure I'll see you.
I appreciate any information you can give us. Would be great, and good luck with your work. And we've been talking with
you? I'm Alex, the art guy. You know, whatever.
Thanks, Alex.
So these are prints.
Art, man.
Oh, thanks, partner.
Really good.
Thanks for looking. These are prints, so they go back a few years.
Choff, are you engaging in the forbidden act of doing artwork outside the... I don't just mean displaying it, but actually doing it outside the forbidden boxes.
And Joff is the other man who was taken to jail three times by police for being outside the blue boxes and refusing to sign a citation saying that we have a right to be here. The Constitution is our permit. I don't know if they used that phrase, but I think that was the force of what both of them were saying. And what Joff is doing is he's creating an artwork. He's creating a portrait. I think he's creating some kind of a design. I don't recall exactly what it was. But he's engaging in behavior that will be illegal inside or outside the boxes under the new commercial vending ordinance that has been created. At least that's according to Scott Collins, who I spoke to at the last city council meeting on that issue. He's the assistant to the assistant to the city manager or some such title.
It's all public space, so
of course it is.
That's why I'm here.
So. And of course it isn't illegal to actually do what you're doing now, though you of course have an illegal display. But what you're doing will be forbidden on June 24th. So I want to commend you for your good work while you're still here.
Thank you.
Any new artwork you want to point out to us here? Anything that you are particularly pleased with?
Probably my recent piece, Painter's Block. Just kind of an illustrated version of what it feels like to be out of inspiration.
Where would that be? Which one is that? You're pointing to a fellow whose head is melting because he's trying to figure out what to do next, I guess, art-wise. Anything you've seen out here on the mall, I was asking Alex the same question, that's interested you or you find worthy of comment?
The weather's nice.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's even though it's warm, it's not hot yet.
So. Yeah. Summer's upon us. It's on its way.
Any luck with good sales today?
It's been a good day.
All right. Well, may the prophets be with you.
Why, thank you.
As a prophet yourself.
Ah, shucks.
Thank you, man. That was Joff Jones.
And let's see if we can run through a few more folks before the time runs out and Uncle Dennis shows up at the studio with From the Cream to the Dregs, which is coming up next.
The Food Now Bombs meal, and I'm talking with
Richard.
And Richard, you say things are going well at Harvey West?
Yeah, I think so. The Rangers are doing a good job. They're not harassing people. The police are doing a good job and making sure that there's no trouble. You know, I think everything is fine over there.
And are you sleeping outside at night?
Yeah, I am sleeping outside at night.
No interventions by anybody?
Not at all that I see.
No loss of your property to anybody else?
There's quite a bit of loss of property, but there's not much you can do about it.
And
accept it and don't let it go if you can't afford to. I let it go. It's a better policy.
Any confiscations by police?
Not that I know of.
And how long have you been outside?
I've been 2 years.
Any changes in that period?
Things have improved, I thought, over the last year as far as taking care of people at the homeless center.
So how have things gotten better at the homeless center? The homeless, I call them the lack of services center, but apparently you think they've been providing services?
Yeah, they are providing services, not for everyone, but they are trying to accommodate more people.
So what kind of involvement do you have yourself? Are you in one of their programs?
Well, I do some volunteer work, and I do what I can to make sure that the park is clean and people don't destroy things.
Fair enough. Anything you want to add?
No.
Thank you. You've been talking with?
Richard Leone.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah,
and your name is?
I'm Robert.
And I'm Robert. Nice meeting you.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for the interview.
Here's a card with the details of when this comes on.
I'll give you a call and my number is 295-0527. I'll just leave my name and number. Okay. If you need any help with anything, let me know.
I didn't hear that. But,
hi, Robert.
Yeah.
We have to be back there, we're a little short for
you. I agree.
No one, like Obama, Clinton, but
Matthew. He's the mayor.
Wait a little bit, last one?
Just Cynthia Matthews.
Oh, man, so you know more about the local stuff. The next time we take it over, probably to do the local stuff.
You want me to type it in?
It's a little hard, of course, to hear with the music going on. There's also the side of the extremely free market.
This is like account setup.
I'm not allowed to carry a hammer.
I can't permit that.
They don't want me to see y'all. They don't want me.
I don't want you.
They don't want me here.
I hate you.
I know. It must be your hairdo.
Yeah, I guess.
It must be the pickiest pole in my leg.
It's my hairdo. Anything new happening outside?
First of all, my boss is still here. I don't need to tackle.
And it's amazing how much the sound degrades if there's a loud music in the background. It didn't seem loud. We could hear each other when I spoke to the people involved, but it's not really radio-worthy, and my apologies for trying to broadcast something that isn't too worthy of broadcasting. It isn't, you know, isn't too audible. Well, here's what's cooking in San Francisco around, you know, a couple of items I noticed. Actually, it's in yesterday's. No, this is a paper from about. No, it is. It's yesterday's paper, Wednesday's Chronicle. U.S. police use of force rules go to the commission. San Francisco Police Commission is set to vote Wednesday on new use of force rules for officers. Rules that were overhauled in the wake of the video-recorded killing of a stabbing suspect in the Bayview neighborhood. After months of debate, the remaining question is just how strongly to regulate officers' life and death decisions. The December 2nd shooting of Mario Woods, thrust the city into the national conversation on law enforcement reform, and now the commission must choose between two versions of a policy drafted by the police department and then amended with input from working groups, community members, and the U.S. Department of Justice. Both versions put a greater impact on requiring officers to de-escalate situations, use force in proportion to the threat they face, and make lethal force a last resort, a cultural shift from the policy the department has been following since 1995. I'd be curious why that was a turning point, kind of an interesting question I may follow up on. But the draft supported by civil rights leaders and many community members is more restrictive, making it mandatory in many cases that officers take certain steps or make particular judgments before using force. The commission will not, however, weigh in on a constitutional proposal to begin equipping San Francisco officers with taser stun guns, which police believe could have been effective in the encounter with Woods. And the problem with taser guns is that even when you're equipped with them, you get BART officers murdering people, like that was the case of Oscar Grant, because he supposedly mistook his taser for his pistol, which a lot of us find hard to believe. And also, tasers can be used to punish people. If you're not going to shoot someone dead and have to file a lot of reports, you'd be more likely to use your weapon. But they didn't get the tasers that they wanted. The version of the policy on use of force, supported by the ACLU, the Public Defender's Office, and other police watchdogs, adopts a higher standard in use of force cases than the Supreme Court precedent, which calls for investigators to judge the reasonableness of a particular use of force from the perspective of an officer on the scene. But the new version proposed by the ACLU and others calls for officers to use minimal force, not reasonable force. It also uses the term shall rather than should in many cases, making it mandatory for officers to follow some aspects of the policy, such as employing de-escalation techniques if there is an opportunity. Officers should attempt to understand and consider the possible reasons why a subject may be non-compliant or resisting arrest. So, the shooting of Mario Woods, I think that was last December, by the San Francisco Police Department, drew outrage when footage revealed that he was shuffling slowly along a wall and not appearing to directly threaten officers when five of them opened fire. Police Department enacted a series of reforms, while the Department of Justice's Community Policing Unit opened a collaborative review of the city force at the request of Mayor Ed Lee and then Police Chief Greg Sir. F's talks intensified. Officers fatally shot a homeless man, there's another shooting, who, like Woods, was allegedly armed with a knife in the Mission District in April, prompting critics who watched the video of the killing to say the officers failed to try de-escalation. Then, after the shooting in May of an unarmed woman in an allegedly stolen car in the Bayview, Sir resigned. But, of course, to me, what this all tends to show is that all these proposals to change the rules mean nothing unless the officers, and I said this earlier in the broadcast, who are engaged in these kind of murderous activity are held accountable, i.e., fired and prosecuted for taking life. And that is simply does not happen much at all in this country or in this state. So I'm reaching my deadline time. There's a couple of things that are interesting here that I guess I'll comment on in passing. One in four children in Santa Cruz County, according to a Sentinel story, and one in seven in Monterey County have untreated tooth decay, according to screenings of youngsters entering kindergarten. Of the 58 private dental offices in Santa Cruz County, only 10 accept the state's dental insurance, mostly due to inadequate payment. That is to say, they don't offer to recompense the dentists enough. Nonprofit dental clinics are at capacity. Salud para la Gente gets 10 calls a week from adults seeking dental care who cannot be accommodated. Dientes Community Dental gets twice that number. In Santa Cruz County, 73% of emergency room visits in 2014, 73%, involve a preventable dental condition. In Monterey County, it was 95%. I may have read this before on the air, but it bears repeating. These findings in a 90-page assessment of oral health needs by Sacramento consultant Barbara Avid were released Friday. Tooth pain is the top reason children miss school, Avid said, and dental problems have a negative impact on people trying to get jobs. And so they're studying this and studying it. And there's more in this article, which is rather lengthy, by John D. Gums. It's in the June 18th Santa Cruz Sentinel, for those who want to look it over. And apparently 141 Monterey Bay dentists, finding 41 used to accept state dental insurance, but no longer due to low payments, patient no-shows, and claims headaches. Some prefer to offer free treatment. To reconsider, dentists wanted higher payments, some said a 70% increase, and fewer hassles. Marcus talked about a homeless veteran whose top priority was a solution for his mouth full of pain. Not sure who Marcus is. One of the many homeless people in Santa Cruz County. How do we expect them to find housing or a job? It makes a huge impression if you can't smile. And there's also a rather interesting story about the San Jose police. Lewd conduct charges against gay men are dismissed. A judge on Friday of last week found that San Jose officers unfairly targeted gay men by carrying out undercover lewd conduct stings at a men's bathroom in Columbus Park, the latest rejection of such police tactics around the country. Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Jose S. Franco concluded that the sting operations at the park during a 17-month period in 2014 or 15, we're not talking about the 70s and Stonewall days, constituted selective discriminatory enforcement in violation of the suspect's equal protection rights. Franco dismissed misdemeanor charges Friday filed against six men accused of loitering near a public restroom with intent to commit a lewd and lascivious or unlawful act. And this article goes on in greater detail to talk about the kinds of entrapment activity done by the San Jose police or the Santa Clara County deputies, not sure which. Well, I hear the sound in the background of a music man coming into the studio, and he'll be with you for the next 3 hours, doing From the Cream to the Dregs. I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30 with a longer edition of this show. If you want to reach me between times, check me out at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'll also be in court tomorrow at 1:30 in Department 1. And wish me luck. You're invited to come if you want. And thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
Up in the morning and out to school. Israel's universities are the tool. Palestinian history, give it a pass. Jobs for the army brass, whipping your fingers right out of the bone to help control the occupied zone. Ring, ring goes the bell. Village kids are in the prison cell. Discrimination at Ben Gurion. Palestinian students almost unknown. Back in the classroom they cook the books. Apartheid don't know how mean it looks. Soon as 2005 rolls around, they're boycotting to bring apartheid down. You say they violate freedom of speech, but you don't practice what you preach.